Hello, folks. My name is Henry Rollins, and you are listening to Ghostly Talk. Touch your friends, touch yourself, but don't touch that dial.
All right, you chipmunks. Ready to sing your new song?
Let's get this over with.
Okay, Squeaky?
Okay.
Okay, Thagador?
Okay.
Okay, Melvin? Melvin? Melvin!
Relax, old man.
Shampoo testing.
What would you know about shampoo?
Nice rug.
Oh, yeah, wonderful.
I'll tell you, Melvin, I got a friend in a research lab that would pay top dollar for a gerbil like you.
Hey, get me some Viagra.
You want an ear growing out of your back, pal?
You wouldn't dare. Let's take him,
baby. You want me to let the cat in here?
Baby!
I'm doing it.
This is John Zappas from the Paranormal Research Center of New England. I hope you guys enjoy listening to Ghostly Talk. These guys are great. Have a lot of fun with them doing their show. And feel free to contact them if you ever need anything. And feel free to contact me if you ever need anything. Be willing to share experiences and talk about things. And like I said, listen to my buddies here at Ghostly Talk.
Candy canes and Christmas bells and ghostly talk here. This is our last ghostly talk before the end of 2005. I want everybody to start crying.
I'm over it.
We're going to be off for next Sunday because it is Christmas Day and we thought, you know what? Let's take the night off and just spend it with our family. So there is going to be new live ghostly talk next week. Plenty of archives to download, though. Just a reminder. You can download any of our archives for free all the time. Our stuff's always up on the site, including tonight's show that we have with John Kachuba right now. It's going to be up on the site by 12 a.m. tonight for you to download for free as much as you want. That's what we've been doing since the beginning. That's what we'll always do. We have a lot of new listeners that come on every weekend. We just would like to remind people that this stuff's always for free on the website to download. Feel free. Enjoy it. That's what it's there for you people to learn and have fun to listen to. We still have John on the phone. John, you still there with us?
I'm still here.
Awesome. You know what? I was just grazing through the book here, Ghost Hunting Illinois again, while we were on break. And I come across when I didn't get to read the whole thing, but I come across one story that I wanted to ask you about, and that is about the Abraham Lincoln home in Springfield, Illinois. I'm not familiar with this. I was wondering if you could shed some light on this for us.
Right. Well, this the home in Springfield was the home that both Abe Lincoln and his wife, Mary Todd, felt as their true home.
Uh-huh.
It was when he was in his law practice before he was elected as president. It's where they raised some of their children, and they felt most at home there.
Mm-hmm.
It was also the last house that he actually lived in before the White House and before his death. So he went from that house to the White House and actually came back later on you know, after his murder, mm-hmm. and was laid out there for a while, too. So the thing about the house is interesting. It's, of course, it's a national park these days, and it's administered by the National Park Service.
Yeah.
It's open to the public. You can take a walk through. It's a pretty quick tour, unfortunately, because the park rangers kind of hurry you through. You don't get a chance to really sort of stop and think a lot about it and sort of take in the atmosphere. But the ghost that is there, supposedly, is not of Abe Lincoln himself, but actually of Mary Todd Lincoln.
Okay.
And what they said is that people have seen, they've actually seen her. They've seen a figure of a woman, and they say that it looks like, you know, Mary Todd Lincoln. But some of the artifacts that remain in that house belong to the Lincoln family. I say some because actually most of his furnishings were stored in Chicago when he was in the White House as president.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a fire in that warehouse, and most of his furnishings were destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So very few of his actual furnishings from Springfield House remain, but a couple were found and brought back to the home. One of them is the rocker that's in the parlor as soon as you walk in, and that was one of his favorite rockers, and also Mary Todd's. And people have seen that rocker rock, you know, on its own. In the windows are always sealed in this place. It's climate controlled,
mm-hmm.
so there's no way to get any kind of ventilation in there or anything.
Yeah.
And they've seen it rock where nothing else was, you know, moving in there. Another thing in that house is a mirror that belonged to Lincoln. And this is a kind of a famous story you may have heard of. There was a point at which he was looking into this mirror, and he saw himself. He saw a double image of himself.
Mm-hmm.
He saw himself looking at himself, you know, two faces. But they weren't exactly the same. One was an older face, kind of haggard, drawn, a little paler, and the other one was his own, you know, sort of present face at that time. And this had happened a couple of times, and he didn't know what to make of it, but
mm-hmm.
he expected something supernatural or something, you know, deeper than just some kind of a malfunction in the mirror. He thought something was going on.
Yeah.
And Mary Todd interpreted it to mean that he would be reelected to the White House, but would not live through a second term.
Ooh.
Which, in fact, is, you know, is what happened.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that mirror is also in the house. So, you know, with some of these belongings, if you believe that some belongings could still attach to a spirit or have that kind of energy, then that might explain some of what's going on there. But of course, the National Park Rangers, you know, I talked to them about it, and they didn't want, you know, they don't want to know anything about it. change the conversation real quick when you ask about Lincoln's ghost. You know?
Well, I've become kind of scared to buy stuff from antique shops because of stuff like that, John.
Right.
That's one theory that we've talked about numerous times on the show here, is that not just like locations or areas and stuff like that, there's also this idea attached to belongings, like you were just talking about, and, you know, especially antiques and stuff like that that have a lot of history behind them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few things that, I mean, for example, my mother is a great example. She has a very old glass-faced doll. It's one of the old-type dolls with the glass. Actually, that would be like the ceramic faces on the ceramic
porcelain.
Head, the porcelain, something like that.
Right.
She's had this for years. It's been in our family for a very long time. And this is actually a nice thing. I've told this story on the show before. But whenever she has a hard decision to make, she always goes into her bedroom where this doll sits at, and she'll think about the decision. And it'll ring. And she believes this is my grandmother and her mother helping her out, because this belonged to my grandmother when she was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
This thing will ring once for no and twice for yes if she has to make a hard decision. And she's been doing this for a very long time with this doll. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bell in it, like on it, and it'll ring. And that's an example right there of an object, an old object, an antique of sorts, that kind of has these paranormal properties, so to say. And I don't like buying antiques just based on that. Let's go, you know, to wherever and buy something brand new. That way I know I don't have no history or anything like that, supposedly.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of talk about that, about items being haunted, especially things that were meaningful, like, you know, buying somebody's wedding ring or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
There could carry some energy there, sure.
Well, something like that, especially because, I mean, a wedding band, for example, I mean, there's a ton of emotion tied to something like that. That isn't just something, you know, like just a piece of jewelry that you wear every once in a while. I mean, that's a very serious bond you're making with that. So most likely a wedding band would be, above all, would be something, yes. And I know a lot of people that have, you know, friends of mine and whatnot that have been married that have used their grandparents' wedding bands and stuff like that. I don't know of any hauntings directly, I should say, unfortunately, but I see people doing that all the time. Mary Todd was also a very spiritual person, from what I understand. I don't know if you got any more information on Mary Todd when you were in your travels, but there have been some photos and stuff with Mary Todd, if I understand correctly.
Well, that's right. I mean, she became very enamored of the spiritualist movement that was going around America in the mid-19th century, with the Fox sisters began in 1848.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she conducted seances not only for Lincoln, but for her two dead sons as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very popular. The question is often asked whether Abraham Lincoln himself was a spiritualist. And people are of two minds if you read about Lincoln. They say, well, he was a very spiritual person. Obviously, I think we all know that. But what does that mean? You know, do they actually believe in communicating with spirits, or do they just have, like, a deep faith? And it's a little bit of both. The verdict is out. It seems like he certainly attended some of these little seances and things that Mary Todd had, although he didn't talk about them much. When he was, after his death, Mary Todd Lincoln very much went into this spiritualist mode and had people of all kinds contacting her, saying they can contact her husband. There's a famous portrait. You may have seen it. A photo.
I was just
going to
mention it. Yep, you read my mind. The particular portrait is a picture of Mary Todd sitting in a chair.
Right.
And next to her is an image of Abraham, her husband.
Well, he's actually standing behind her.
Yeah,
he has
behind
his hands
him,
on her shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's like standing behind her, like in a very protective pose. And it's pretty clear that it's Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you know whether the picture is genuine or not is anybody's guess. She believed it. I mean, she believed that she was in contact with her husband. And when that picture was taken in the studio in New York City, and she went in, the story is that she went in incognito, that she wore heavy, you know, the heavy black veil of a widow in mourning,
mm-hmm.
so the photographer didn't really know who she was. But then, you know, if you look at the photo, I mean, her veil is lifted, so I'm not sure, you know, what happens there. She was trying to avoid recognition because a lot of people had approached her with, you know, basic fake evidence of her husband because they knew who she was. They knew they'd probably get paid or whatever, so she was trying to sort of avoid that, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know if she did or not.
I know you have other books that you've been working on. Well, you also have Ghost Hunting Ohio. You mentioned that in the last segment. I didn't get a copy of that, unfortunately.
Oh, I'm sorry you didn't.
Is that the first one or the second one you wrote?
Right. Ghost Hunting Ohio came out in September of 2004. That was the first in the Haunted Heartland series.
Okay.
And if you're looking, you know, I got the Illinois book. Ohio is, I should say Illinois is based on Ohio in that it has the same thing. It has about three dozen places throughout the state. The same type of format. I went and visited all the places, got firsthand stories, and took photos or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That book came out in September. Ghost Hunting Illinois just came out in September of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I should point out that in these books, all these places are open to the public. That's something that I definitely wanted to include. So even if I had a great ghost story from a private residence or something, I wouldn't include it because I want my readers to be able to actually go to these places themselves and check them out.
You know what, John? And it really bums me out that our other co-host, Doug, isn't here right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's off for the night. But that is Doug's favorite type of haunt, is the public haunt. We call it the mm-hmm. public haunt because it can be experienced by anybody. And you're lending the same idea, I believe, too, is that these places can be visited by anybody. You can go there pretty much any time you want.
Right.
And possibly have some type of experience of this sort if you're interested in this sort of thing or if you're just interested in that area, for example. The public haunts, I'm starting to really go with Doug on this stuff, too, is that the public type haunts, I mean, even though I like doing private investigations, which we do every once in a while, if mm-hmm. we're asked by a friend or somebody we know to come check their house out, we love to do it. But the public haunts, which are listed in your books here, Ghost Hunting Illinois and Ghost Hunting Ohio, I didn't know they were all public haunts. Thank you for pointing that out. These are all places that can be visited by people any time, pretty much. You know, there are areas out there, you know, here in Michigan, too, that, you know, growing up, like all of us have, and we all kind of grew up around, you know, studying the paranormal, there's a lot of areas that you can go to that are supposedly haunted, but they're also illegal to go to, as in trespassing.
Yes.
You follow me? And And there's always been stories. Well, we went there and checked it out one night, and it was really cool and whatnot. But, yeah, if you do go there and you get caught there, there's a possibility of you getting arrested if you go there. But
there's some danger, too. You know, if you're tramping around some, you know, half-falling down building at 2 o'clock in the morning and you're 20 miles out of town and you fall through a floorboard and break your leg or something, you know, you're in trouble.
You're in big trouble.
In addition to being illegal, sometimes I talk about those things and not, you know. There are so many places that you can go to that are available, easily accessible. Like I said, these public places. In these books, they're libraries, they're restaurants, they're hotels, they're retail staff, you know, stores, historic sites. So you don't really need to go tromping around someplace.
No, there isn't really a need for that, in my opinion, if you want to learn about these things and possibly have an experience of sorts. In regards to Ghost Hunting Ohio, though, we had a question for you, John.
Sure.
I was instructed specifically by our co-host, Doug.
Oh, boy.
Who was he's like, make sure you ask John about this. Now, what? I don't even know what the... I always forget the name, but Will, what is the name of this thing? We're just curious if you know anything about this or not, John.
Okay.
Go ahead, Will.
It's a place called Fudge Road.
Fudge Road.
So it's near
Fudge Road?
Yeah.
It's near Dayton.
No. No, I don't.
Okay, cool.
Sorry.
No, like I said, we were just curious because what's the story, Will? I mean, I just throw it out there.
There's supposed to be there's a creepy bridge. I mean, that's there. I mean, I've actually seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's a house that it was a supposed drug house that's now boarded up. And there is a house on the road that is boarded up. And it's all lit up, too. There's supposed to be a munchkin house where everything is small, a dwarf home. But we didn't see that out there at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also supposed to be this beast out there. It's called the Fudge Best White Human-Like Beast.
Wow.
Yeah.
We didn't see that either.
Yeah, it was something we were curious about because when we heard that you had a book called Ghosting Ohio, we were wondering, it's an obscure story that we heard from someone, and yeah, I was wondering if you had experience, because we don't know too many people that have really heard about this particular phenomenon itself.
No.
What are some of the places, I'm just curious, most notable, I don't have that book unfortunately, but I'm wondering, because we actually had been out to a place also called the Moonville Tunnel.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
That's in Zaleski, Ohio.
It's about 10 miles from my house.
Oh, no kidding, eh?
I live in that part of the woods, as they say, and it's actually in my book. It's included in a chapter I have on, I just titled a chapter Athens, Ohio, because it's close to Athens.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I had the Moonville Tunnel in there, also a place called Lake Hope Furnace. Lake Hope is not too far from there. You may have passed that if you're out that way.
Mm-hmm. You ever been to the Haydenville Tunnel?
The what tunnel?
The Haydenville Tunnel.
No, I don't know that one.
It's you got to go into a cemetery and then go down the back hill, and there's a tunnel back there. It's kind of falling apart, but you can get back a little ways.
Okay.
We went to that one last time we were out in Ohio, Will. We actually went down into the tunnel. Yeah, it's pretty scary, John. I got about 10 foot in there, and all I saw was like just a cave-in of bricks. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to turn around and go find snakes or something. I don't want to deal with this thing in here. It's an amazing tunnel because you walk in there and everything gets, I mean, I think it might be more of a natural formation. But when you walk in the tunnel, you know, when we were there, it was very humid that day. It was really hot. It just got done raining like earlier that day, so everything was really, you know, humid and sticky and hot. And when you walked into this tunnel, even like 10 or 15 feet like I did, everything just got nice. It got very cool. Not cold, uncomfortable cold, but nice and cool. It cooled right down. It's a very cool tunnel. Ghost Hunting Ohio, that came out, you said, September 2004, right?
Correct.
That was the first in your series.
That's right.
We've been all over the place in Ohio. It's obviously close to Michigan, so it's a little more accessible for us.
Sure, right.
Is there any other stories that you have included in that book that are notable? I'm just curious.
Oh, well, yeah. I think they're all notable.
No,
but
I don't mean that.
No, I just teasing you. I think they're all great stories. And by the way, I just checked on Amazon.com, and both these books are shipping in 24 hours. So still time for Christmas.
Yeah, there you go.
Just so I mentioned that. Merry Christmas.
Well, these books are chock full of great stories. I mean, I have Ghost Hunting Illinois in my hand right here. And this is I went through this when I received it in the mail a couple of months ago. And there's a lot of great stories in here to read I imagine that Ghost Hunting Ohio set up the exact same way. You also have a new book coming out that I mentioned, too. It's just called Ghost Hunter, right?
Right. It's called Ghost Hunters, and that'll be out 2006. September of 2006.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little different in that it's national in scope. Ohio and Illinois obviously are part of what we're calling the Haunted Heartland series.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was to hopefully do a book for maybe all the Midwest states, including Michigan.
No.
The Ghost Hunters will be national. Again, it's still places that I visited,
mm-hmm.
but they'll be across the country. I've worked with, you know, some different paranormal investigating groups in different areas. It will also have, in addition to sort of my adventures at these places, it'll have some profile chapters as well on some notable people in the field, you know.
Okay.
For instance, like Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Oh, yes. We've had them on the show before. We had Lorraine Warren on the show because Ed...
And oh, did you?
Yeah, we had Lorraine on, like 2 years ago, I think. That was like almost 2 years ago now. Really wonderful lady to talk to. Really
she
wonderful.
She is. Very nice. So, you know, I'll have some of those things too. So it'll be a little bit different in that it'll have a broader, it'll have more interesting things, I think, in it than just the investigations and, you know, first-hand encounters, although all those are good, you know.
Well, it's important to have, you know, to reference people like that, I think, sometimes. I mean, that's what our show is about. We've been lucky enough to have people like Lorraine Warren on to kind of give us a scope of where a lot of these ideas come from.
Right.
Some people think, you know, now that ghost hunting and the paranormal is starting to become a very popular thing in media nowadays,
mm-hmm.
some people think it's just a brand new thing. Like, you know, I don't think people are that, naive about it, but they don't realize that research has been going on for centuries, more or less.
Sure.
And there are a lot of people in history, like Lorraine Warren, for example, who kind of cut new ground, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
With approaches and ideas and the areas they went to, they obviously visited many areas. Most notably, the Amityville house was one of them. We've actually talked to George Lutz, too, on the show.
Oh, yeah.
And discussed things with him. So the people like that are very important, I think, to notice. I'm glad you actually got to talk to Lorraine Warren, am I correct?
Yeah, I've known them. I used to actually live in the same town as they. I grew up in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually lived in the same town that they did for a while, too, Monroe. So I've known them for, you know, probably a decade or so professionally, and they actually, Lorraine Warren actually wrote the afterword for Ghost Hunting Ohio.
Okay.
So the afterword in that book is from the Warrens.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
And yeah, I'm going to feature a chapter on them in Ghost Hunters as well.
Very cool. Well, John, I really have to thank you for coming on the show. These books are excellent. I mean, I know I have Ghost Hunting Ohio, I'm sorry, Illinois is in front of me right now. And this thing is just chock full of information. And there's a lot of great stories to check out. And this is a different type of book, too, because you really went out there to all these locations and just more or less tried to focus on what's going on now, not
right.
just what may have happened or the legends and spirits. Because we know, even though, I mean, I like hearing a good ghost story better than anyone. I mean, that's the reason
sure.
I do this thing. But nowadays, I know I'm a lot more interested in finding out what's happening now with the area.
Mm-hmm.
What are people experiencing now? And the best part is that, I mean, I hate to, I'm gonna drive it home again because we talk about it a lot now. These are all public places, like John said. These are places you can go to check out on your own if you'd like. So you can take a book like Ghost Hunting Illinois and use it as a roadmap, so to say, if you want, for Illinois, and go and visit these places yourself. And I think that's really important for people to do if they want to get into this particular thing as far as ghost hunting goes. John, thanks again for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, have a great holiday, too.
You too, thanks.
Thanks for coming on the show. Guys, this is Ghostly Talk. Next hour and a half, we're going to have a friend named Bobby Atristain. She's going to probably kick my butt when she comes on the air.
Hopefully.
But we're going to be talking to her to the end of the show here tonight. Again, John, thanks for coming on the show, okay?
Thanks very much. Take care, guys.
Take care of yourself. We'll see you later.
Bye.
Yeah, Bobby's going to be coming on here at 7:30, and this is going to be a little bit different, too. You know, this is going to be really tough, too, I think, because we don't have Doug here. Because we're going to be talking about some pretty interesting ideas with Bobby. She came to me a couple months ago and said, hey, I was wondering if you'd like me to come on the show and talk about psychological effects that the paranormal would have on your brain. Bonnie's got this. Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting idea, but I'm really excited to talk to her about this. So why don't we take a quick break here, Will? We'll be right back here. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
I'm Will.
And we'll be right back after these messages.
Willis of ghostsofohio.org, specializing in backward masking, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Well, you've all heard the story about Rudolph and his nose, but I'll tell you a Christmas tale that never has been told. Well, you may think you've heard it all, but you ain't heard nothing yet about that crazy Christmas that the North Pole can't forget. Rudolph was under the weather. He had to call in sick. So he got on the horn to his cousin Leroy, who lived out in the sticks. He said, Santa's really counting on me, and I hate to pass the buck. Leroy said, hey, I'm on my way, and he jumped in his pickup truck. When Leroy got to the North Pole, all the reindeer snickered and laughed. They'd never seen a deer in overalls and a John Deere tractor hat. But Santa stepped in and said, just calm down, cause we've all got a job to do. And like it or not, Leroy's in charge, and he's gonna be leading you. And then Leroy, the redneck reindeer, took to the front of the sleigh, delivering toys to all the good old boys and girls along the way. We're just a down home party animal, two stepping across the sky. He makes jingle bells with the rebel yell. Their tune. He had them scooting a hoof on every single roof by the light of a neon moon. Down to wrap his bag with a Dixie flag, he was having the time of his life. And you could hear him call, Merry Christmas, y'all, and to all of y'all a good night. And it was Leroy, the redneck reindeer, took to the front of the sleigh, delivering toys to all the good old boys and girls along the way. We're just a down-home party animal, two-stepping across the sky. He makes jingle bells with the rebel yell and made history that night. He makes jingle bells with the rebel yell and made history that
Russell White with Ghouli.com. That's www.ghouli.com. And with Ghost Magazine, you're listening to Ghostly Talk Radio.
Tough it is sometimes to do a show without your co-host here.
Yeah, it happens.
I'm having a good time here, but it's different not having Doug here by my side working on things and talking about things with our guests together. But, you know, no problem at all, because we have on the line right now, we have, and you know what, in the last segment, I knew I was going to slaughter at people. I think I said it, Bobby Atrestain, which was obviously horribly mispronounced. It's actually pronounced Bobby Atrestine. Bobby founded the VGHRS in spring of 2000 with the help of Matt Devier of GHRS. Bobby and her husband Rick reside in Nottoway County, Virginia. She is a researcher and writer for the print edition of Ghost Magazine. You guys all know who Ghost Magazine is. And the TAP Paramagazine. In early 2005, she was awarded an honorary certificate in parapsychology from the Southeastern Institute of Parapsychology for her research into the paranormal. Bobby also is consulting for a new series for MTV and Fangoria TV regarding the paranormal. Since Bobby founded the Center for Paranormal Research in May of 2000, she has had the chance to serve as a paranormal consultant for PBS's Things That Go Bump in the Night 2, a sci-fi series, and for two of the Travel Channel's productions, including The World's Most Cursed Places. She also consulted with L.B. Taylor to give him some ideas for stories to use in his Ghosts of Virginia book series. She, along with the VGHRS, have been covered by such mainstream periodicals as the New York Times, the New York Daily News, the Washington Post, the Roanoke Times, the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and the Washington Times concerning the paranormal in Virginia. Bobby, you're a very busy young lady, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
It's you. I'm just looking. When I was putting this bio together, I'm like, this lady really gets around. You have been doing tons of work here. How long have you been working on stuff of this sort? I'm just curious.
Well, really, all my life, because I grew up in houses that had interesting things happen. But I guess you would say professionally or whatever, as a serious hobby for the past 5 years.
Wow, that's about the time as far as we have. We've been doing Ghostly Talk for like 4 years now, so it's around the same amount of time. You emailed me a few months ago and said, "Hey, Scott, I'm just curious if you'd like to do a show." And let me know if I'm phrasing this correctly. Psychological effects of paranormal activity on the brain. Am I correct?
Yeah. Basically, haunted people. I found there are more haunted people than haunted houses. People that actually, it doesn't matter where they live, things happen to them. And I found that there's a certain set of trademarks that these people all have in common. And I think it's related to, neurochemistry somehow. I'm still working on figuring that out. It's definitely brain-related, I believe.
Well, this goes back, I like the idea you're throwing out, too. Haunted people, not haunted place. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of haunted places, but there are also maybe haunted people, too.
Yeah.
That could lead into a lot of things, people that are sensitive, psychics, mediums. I mean, I would consider those people haunted people also in a manner of speaking also.
Yeah.
But there is this, this goes back a very long time to kind of like the basic setups of poltergeist phenomena. You have the five stages of poltergeist phenomena. And I'm sure both of us know that, it's usually young ladies between the ages of, I believe, 15 and like 25, are the ones that kind of have this poltergeist phenomena happen around them more than not.
Pubescent women. Basically.
Thanks for throwing that word in there. Pubescent.
That's what I've heard described.
No, that's correct. Because young ladies at that age.
That's fun to say, though.
It's pubescent. Let's say it again. Ready?
Pubescent.
Yes. Ladies, obviously, at that age, between those ages, they're what Doug would call is a psychological furnace, where there's tons of energy, and I would consider those
hormones firing over and over and over again, cool. All over the place. Yeah.
Yes, just hormones firing. You're really starting to sway this the wrong way. I can feel it will stop right now. It's gonna be like, yes, these young ladies in their young women. No, but they have this thing going on where it may make them haunted people too. Am I correct, Bobby?
Yes. Actually, it seems that females are more susceptible to this than males.
I wonder
why hormones definitely may play a part in this. I'm sure they do.
Hormones. What else do you think would make females more, how would you say, haunted than males?
Well, the only thing I can figure is maybe estrogen plays a part in it. If you look at a lot of psychics, although granted there are many male psychics, most of the people who are sensitive tend to be female, and it tends to run in families, which lends to some sort of genetic component to
yeah.
it. Although, with my haunted people, I find that probably upwards of the higher 90th percentile are female that
okay.
are haunted people.
Well, you know, and come to think about it, the majority of psychics that I do know personally, Bobby, they are females.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I may know one or actually two males that are that actually go out in the field with us and work with us in locations.
Right.
And I know dozens of females that I should say claim that they have psychic abilities. I'm not saying that I don't believe them, but some people, you know, there's always the ideas that there may be something else going on there. You never know.
Exactly.
But I have to agree with you. It seems like there are more females. Excuse me, more females out there that have these abilities that may be haunted, like you say. It's an interesting idea. I'm just, we're talking about, like you said, this idea has had me grabbed all week, Bobby, about psychological effects, like you said before. There's this idea of haunted people, if I'm correct. What else is involved with this? I'm just curious.
Well, one thing, they definitely seem to be sensitive to electromagnetic energy. Sensitive to EM, and generally the people in the UK, for instance, have recognized this, and they actually have some sort of treatment for it. But people who are sensitive to high EM, if you think about it today, we're really inundated with it by all the electrical stuff that's around us, computers and TVs and lights and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's why maybe paranormal phenomena has become more prevalent in recent years. And another thing that we notice, right before someone will contact us, generally there's been something major happen in their family, either marital problems, some sort of dysfunction, be it finance, you know, someone's lost a job, an affair, you know, having a problem with their kids, something major has happened to disrupt the normal family cycle. And a lot of times when we dig into it, we also find the key person, the person who's experiencing the most phenomena, is generally a lot of times bipolar, or has been diagnosed as bipolar, and they're generally not on their medications. Now, I'm not at all saying that people are crazy who are experiencing this stuff, because other people in the house who don't have anything psychological wrong with them also experience this sort of stuff. But for some reason, the neurochemistry of a bipolar person seems to bring on. And maybe that's where it does tie into the poltergeist phenomena as well.
Well, bipolar. Now, see, I'm not up to date on my
references. Okay, you're not explaining mental illnesses.
Yeah, I have friends. I've heard, well, I'm bipolar, man. So I'm like, okay, that's great. You're bipolar. But you know what? To be honest with you, I really don't know what the clinical term of bipolar means. Do you know what that is?
Okay. Yeah, bipolar used to be called manic depression a long time ago, and then it became hip to call it bipolar in the 1990s, and basically bipolar disorder is characterized by periods of extreme highs and extreme lows.
Okay.
And then series of mixed states. And basically, it can also be accompanied by psychosis if you suffer from bipolar 1 disorder. There are like 4 or 5 different, I don't want to call them stages, but different types of bipolar disorder. But the people that I'm talking about are really bipolar 1, and
okay.
so you do have to take into consideration that psychosis is a symptom of that. You know, I can't document a case and then have, you know, Joe Nickel from, you know, Psychops come in and say, oh, well, she suffers from psychosis, and blow everything out. You know, you have to take all that stuff into account when you're documenting a case.
Okay. Well, that's interesting because, I mean, mental illness, you know, we've talked about this numerous times on the show, Bobby, and I firmly believe that there are people that are locked up right now, let's just say, people that are under observation, let's say, that may just have a different outlook, may see things. I have personal friends that aren't locked up that are sensitives, for example.
Right.
And they've told me the story of how they became sensitives. And in the beginning of this story these people usually have is, I was really, really scared. It scared me really bad when I had this awakening, so to say. And it's taken me years to kind of practice and tune it out when I have to and adjust my life around this thing. And we both know that there are people that are put away for stuff like that. They see things differently, or they react to things differently because they have a different output. And, you know, obviously there's this idea of schizophrenia, which I do know what that is, and that's, well, I can give you...
It's the cousin of bipolar disorder.
That's the cousin of bipolar
it's
disorder.
It's the cousin. Actually, schizophrenia is one end of the spectrum and bipolar is the other, and somewhere in the middle they meet. So it's the cousin. It's the very close cousin of schizophrenia.
Well, people that, you know, sensitives and psychics we, you know, that we've talked to or, you know, that you hear about in the news or whatnot, they hear voices sometimes, right?
Yes.
Which is
yes.
a trait, it's a trait characteristic of schizophrenia, from what I understand.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I've never been, you know, anybody that comes to me, I mean, and says, yeah, well, I hear things and I hear people talking to me. I don't automatically say, well, you're schizophrenic. You need help. You need to get drugged up right now.
Right.
And that's unfortunately what a lot of people do nowadays. Doctors like to do that. They just like to take people and drug them up to the point where they don't feel anymore. And then they're pretty much zombies. They don't do anything.
Yeah.
I think it would make more sense for people. Or well, for doctors, for example, to really try to, and I'm sure there are called psychologists, I believe, that try to explore these things more and try to find out what the root of the issue may be, or, you know, try to treat these people so they can live regular lives, as opposed to just drugging them up and throwing them in a room or putting them in a bed somewhere. But I hear this thing, where people say, well, I hear voices, Scott. I'm hearing things, and when I or they'll say, when I come into this particular house, I hear something. Right? Obviously, if you're not a ghost hunter or somebody who studies the paranormal, you're gonna go, well, that person's crazy, man. That person's got problems. They're hearing voices. There's something definitely weird going on there. It's an interesting idea. I mean, what I've always tried to do is, and then maybe you can help me with this, Bobby. Where do you draw the line at between a psychic and a schizophrenic? I mean, people listening to the audience, I am in no way trying to equate these two together, but there is this similarity there that I'm curious about. What do you know about? I mean, is there anything have you done any research on this, for example, Bobby?
Well, yeah. I mean, for one thing, I grew up with a schizophrenic uncle.
Okay.
Who maybe was schizophrenic, maybe was not, and I can tell you a story about that later on.
Yeah.
But, so I grew up with, knowing about mental illness and have studied it a lot, did a lot of reports for school on schizophrenia, read a lot of stuff about bipolar disorder and about all the different types of medications that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you need to know that to be able to, because the psychological analysis is probably what I consider the most important part of our investigative process, foremost, of the people, because they're your witnesses and you need to figure out what's going on in their heads. And what their perceptions may be so that, you know, A, you have a better idea of are these people crazy, because you do run into this every once in a while. Not a lot, but once in a while you do find a few Fruit Loops.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know, you have to watch out for those. But what I recommend in these situations, for instance, if there is someone who has been diagnosed with, we'll take bipolar because schizophrenia, definitely believe that you can over-medicate someone, but to a point, I do think recommend that people, if I genuinely believe them to be mentally ill with schizophrenia or bipolar, do need to be on the proper medication, because now they've come up with such. It's not like 20 years ago when they put them on Thorazine and they were in the back room of some asylum. Now they've got these new neuroleptics that are called atypical antipsychotics, which the side effects are extremely. They're much better. They're not the greatest side effects, but they're definitely not what the old school anti-psychs were.
Mm-hmm.
And so today it's much better to be mentally ill than it was even 15 years ago. Psychiatry has made leaps and bounds since the mid-1990s, thank goodness.
Well, I know, I have a friend, actually, who is schizophrenic. She's diagnosed schizophrenic. And I've watched her on the medication. This was like years ago. As opposed to now, I'm saying. Years ago, she would take her medication, and it turned her, I mean, literally, for lack of a better term, it just made her stoned. She was just out, gone.
Yeah, it did. It did, and they couldn't function. You're right, absolutely. It was horrible. And the newer, they're called neuroleptics or atypical antipsychotics, and it's a whole class of them.
Mm-hmm.
Zyprexa, Giardine, Abilify, Seroquel, that don't have that effect.
Mm-hmm.
You can still function. You can take that stuff and still hold down a job,
mm-hmm.
and have a job that requires you to think and use your brain.
Well, that's it, and that's what I thought the goal was, which maybe they finally achieved that goal. Is it?
And that's been very recently. I mean, a lot of these medications I mentioned really have only come out in the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know, like
so
I said,
very recent.
There's that. I guess that's the goal. I'm hoping that, you know,
yeah.
this person has an issue that they can't function normally. They can't hold a job down. They can't operate a motor vehicle. They can't do things. Let's try to help these people out so they can function and be a productive person.
Exactly.
Not give them some drugs and then so they all they can do is just sit there in a chair and stare
drool.
At a lamp, you know, and drool.
Yeah.
Exactly. And
yeah.
I saw my friend go through that. I saw my friend. She dealt with that where I mean I'd be literally like, hello, are you there? And she'd be like, huh, what? You know?
Exactly.
It would keep her leveled out. You could talk to her. That's about it. That's all she could really do is maybe talk a little bit. But she couldn't do anything else. She just could not function, and she could barely hold a job down because of that. And she was supposedly getting better.
I know. And that's why a lot of schizophrenics and bipolar people who have bipolar 1 disorder stop taking their medication because the side effects, you know, suck. And they did suck. And another thing is it depends on the severity of each person's disease. And some people respond better to medication than others. And unfortunately, we're still really in the dark ages with mental illness.
Well, yeah.
So it makes it kind of tricky. It's a real tricky line about what you do about that. But what I try to recommend, at least for the people that I have dealt with, they did need medication because they were classic textbook. This one case in particular, we call it a haunting in Kentucky on our website.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting case, one of the most interesting cases we've ever dealt with. We had everything from voodoo dolls and that thing to they thought they had demons and no lie, that place was haunted.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, the lady there who had been diagnosed as bipolar, she didn't tell me that. I found out from her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't taking her medication. We spent 3 days there. We drove up there because from Richmond it was about 8-9 hour drive.
Oh, God.
And actually had an RV parked outside of their house so we could, and had cameras wired running to their house.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in the camper with monitors so we could try to be the least intrusive into their environment as possible.
Yeah.
To monitor these people. And she would come out and she had textbook, you know, mixed episodes where she would get really hyper and her heart would start beating really fast and she would, you know, start freaking out and she would say, oh, it's a demon trying to get into me. And you know, I would say, no, that's, you need medication. That's
yeah.
textbook manic.
Yeah, you have an issue.
Yeah.
It's not the environment, it's you. And that,
exactly. And the fact that she already has it in her head that there's a demon, it just makes it, then she just, you know, wound herself that much more, got herself much, you know, that much more upset. Which one, in her case, she really needed the medication now. Her husband, who was this painter, house painter, level-headed, down-to-earth guy, actually witnessed an apparition in their house of a little girl in period clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Freaked him out so much, he had to go be put on anti-anxiety medication.
Oh, my God.
So here's this guy who's just, you know, he knows what the world's all about. He's just, you know, this blue-collar, hard-working guy, and then he sees a ghost,
mm-hmm.
and it just destroys his idea of what reality is, basically.
Mm-hmm.
He has to be put on some kind of anti-anxiety, Klonopin or something. Poor guy.
That's a really great point, though, Bobby, because, I mean, we said this a thousand times on this show, and I always use the example. I've been to places. I've went and done a pre-investigation, not really, you know, a full-blown, let's go in there and check the place out, bring all of our equipment, bring in people to check the place out, too.
Mm-hmm.
Literally just go in there to map the house out, get an idea of what's going on, talk to the people. And the one thing I always tell people is, okay, look, we're going to be taking photos, we're going to be taking audio, we're going to be running cameras, we're going to be doing all kinds of crazy stuff here. The thing is we're going to show you everything that we get as far as photos and audio and video goes. If there's nothing on there, there's nothing on there. You're going to hear it. if there is something on there, you're going to hear it, okay? Can you handle the latter of the two? Can you handle the fact that you think you may have a haunting in your home? You're not sure, but you want to have some people come and check the place out and possibly verify that your home may be haunted. Can you handle that in the long run?
Right. For
if we leave here and, you know, you sell your house a week later and have to go through all that trouble just because we saw a little blurb on a photo we, you know, that we shot that could or could not be an entity of sorts, can you handle that fact? Can your mind take that, or are you going to freak out? I don't want to be responsible for that myself. That's
right.
Just me, though. I don't want to scare people. That's not what my job is. My job is to educate and inform. That's what your job is, obviously, too. That's a big thing for people, and I mean, literally, I've told people that, and they've said, you know, that every single time it's been the same thing. Oh, yeah, I'm totally fine with it. Don't worry about a thing, Scott. Come and do your thing. Do your investigation. I'd love to have you here. Please, please, please. And then a couple days later, before the investigation, I get the phone call, and they say, you know what? I thought about what you had to say, and, you know, I think I'm more comfortable just maybe thinking that there's a ghost here, not having a photo or a piece of audio or a piece of video to verify that. Because that more or less may be verifying for fact that there is a ghost in your house, and now you know that your home's haunted. And we both know, and something I've heard recently, which makes a whole lot of sense, fear of the unknown is equated to fear of death.
Yeah.
And people are afraid of death. We just know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that scares people beyond all belief. And like you just gave a great example, Bobby. This gentleman's a hardworking guy, blue-collar man, goes to work every day, does his thing, pays his taxes and whatnot, and then he sees something that shatters his view of reality right there. And now he is being treated. That's very scary. You know?
Yeah.
It's a very scary idea. Some people, I guess, just can't handle it the same way. I know myself, and I've said it 1,000 times on the show here, I have never seen a ghost. I've never seen one. Have you ever seen a ghost before, Bobby? I'm just curious.
Yes, I have lots of times, actually.
Really?
I'm one of those haunted people, so yes.
You're one of the, okay.
I'm one of the haunted people, yes. I've seen shadow people, a shadow person, actually. That was probably the freakiest thing I ever saw, but yes, I have.
Well, and that's the question. When people find out that you do this thing, that's usually the first question. So have you seen a ghost? And I always am very open about that. I say, no, I've never seen one. I've never
seen
anything.
Well, my standard answer is I've seen things I can't explain. If you want to call it a ghost, it's a ghost. But I've definitely seen things that would be characterized as two shadow people, one that was only maybe 3 feet away from me.
Mm-hmm.
That totally freaked me out because it was in total light. All the lights were on, and yet there it was.
Mm-hmm.
Since I was a young girl. So I think that's why I'm interested in this. Like I said, growing up in houses where things, you know, unexplained happen, and, you know, I had dead relatives that would come visit my mother and grew up hearing those stories. So to me, there was never really a question of if they existed because I just grew up knowing that things like this happened.
Yeah.
And but I wanted to explore it from a scientific viewpoint.
And that's what we do, too.
To try to get some sort of tangible evidence of it, to try to figure out how to explain it so that it wouldn't be unknown.
And that's the big thing. I mean, that's what we do here, obviously. I mean, we try to approach things from a scientific viewpoint and try to get that piece of hard evidence that can be reproduced in a lab and it can support your hypothesis. That's still very hard to do. It's why, actually, I shouldn't say that. It hasn't been done yet. It hasn't been done yet. There's a lot of wonderful research going on, obviously, you know, by yourself here, the things you're working on. But still has not been proven yet where people can take an area and reproduce something in the lab, I'm saying. Because sometimes I know we talk to so many ghost hunters, and I like to ask them, like, you know, what'd you get into this for? What is your idea? You know, well, I want to prove the existence of the afterlife. Well, that's a very open-ended statement, in my opinion. That's a
it's
a huge open-ended statement because, I mean, just that's what the Ghostly talks about. We're talking about proving the existence of the afterlife. Well, that's good when you have an internet radio show because it gives you plenty of things to talk about.
Exactly.
It's awesome. I mean, yeah, we can talk to all types of great people that way. But when you're in a paranormal investigation club or a group or a team, whatever you want to call it, you kind of, I think, have to narrow things down a little bit more and find out, you know, get your approaches, get your ideas, and find out where you stand. And I always tell people, there's more to this than just going out and shooting photos and taking audio and things like that. Do you have a science? Do you have a hypothesis? Do you have an idea that you want to approach every investigation with? Some people don't have that, unfortunately, but that's just part of the growth. I mean, this is still a very new study from what I see, and people are still learning how to study it, so to say.
Yeah.
There's millions of ways. I mean, that's the great thing about doing what we do, I think. And tell me what you think about this, Bobby. I mean, really, well, the first thing I tell people also is, you know, there are no experts in this field. This is the only field that you can be an expert, so to say, and still not know anything and still be called an expert.
Exactly.
It's a funny statement, but it's a very true statement at the same time. There's people we talk to all the time. Well, I'm an expert in EVP research. Really? Okay, that's cool, because you know, I've been doing this for a pretty long time myself, and I still don't know anything, I don't think.
Exactly.
I don't know anything that's going on there. So I think people kind of locking down, and this is what you guys appear to be doing here, is kind of getting the scientific method in place with this, and you're approaching it. I mean, what we're talking about here tonight is just one side of that, which I find fascinating. Why don't we take a quick break, Bobby, okay?
Okay.
We got a lot more to cover, I think. This is really great. Thanks for coming on the show again. This is Ghostly Talk, though. I'm Scott L.
I'm Will.
Doug is gone, man.
Bonnie's gone, too.
Bonnie left us also. I mean, everybody's just kind of dropping off like flies tonight. We're still going, though. We have Bobby on the line. We're talking about the psychology of paranormal occurrences and what they have on your brain. A lot more to come here after these messages.